Hello, and welcome to the Thinking Jew podcast, where we dive deep into Torah and Judaism to uncover its hidden beauty. Come join us as we take a closer look and breathe new life into traditional Jewish ideas. And now, here's your host, Rabbi Moshe Siegel.
Hello, and welcome back to episode 32. There's an interesting halacha that I've been asked about multiple times, and it's not so well known, but it impacts a variety of laws across the spectrum of Jewish law. And that is the concept of prioritizing the right side to the left side. There's a lot of examples of this. One that came up recently in episode 29, we discussed washing your hands in the morning, and we mentioned the law that you're supposed to first wash your right hand and then your left hand. And there's a lot of examples of this. Some other examples are when you get dressed in the morning, the code of Jewish law says you should actually place your right arm in your shirt before your left. And same with your legs. When you shower, you're supposed to clean the right side of your body before the left side. You're supposed to put your right shoe on first. Some other examples, you put the mezuzah on the right side of your doorpost. When we cover our eyes, we use our right hand. A scribe, when he writes a Torah scroll, needs to use his right hand. When we make a blessing over food, we're supposed to hold the food we're about to eat or the drink in our right hand. And there's many, many more examples where we find that when you're doing only one thing, you use the right hand. And when you're using both hands, you do the right first and then the left. So what exactly is the deeper idea here? Why do we prioritize our right side to our left side? And really, I think the deeper question is, what is the concept of right and left? What are their spiritual representations that creates this expression in Jewish law? So let's dive in. There's a famous verse in Eov, in Job, chapter 19, verse 26, that says, "Mi besari echeza eloka," from my flesh I can see God, which means that by looking internally at our bodies, we can discover Hashem through that. We can discover the spiritual side. On a deeper level, the Kabbalists explain that our bodies are actually a microcosm of the universe, and the same system of creation and connection to God that exists on a meta level in the entire universe exists in a micro level in our bodies. So let's look at the function of our right side and our left side as expressed in our bodies. So for the sake of simplicity, I'm going to be discussing a right-handed person, since that's the majority of people, although full transparency, I'm not one of them. And if you're interested in knowing how things are different for a lefty, feel free to reach out. So the right hand is the stronger, more dominant hand. Most of our actions that we do, the primary role of that action is accomplished by the right hand. And if you look at that same action, if there's a secondary role, the secondary role is generally accomplished by the left hand, which makes a lot of sense. You'd want your stronger, more dominant hand to have the primary role. So let's take, for example, eating. When you eat, you hold your fork in your right hand, as that's the primary role, taking the food from your plate to your mouth. And you use your knife in your left hand, which is the secondary role, assisting your fork in getting the necessary food. Another example, let's say, is nailing a nail into the wall. You hold the nail in place with your left hand, which is the secondary action, while the primary action of actually hitting the hammer on the nail, banging it into the wall, is done with your right hand. Now you'll notice that in most actions where your hands aren't doing the same thing together, they're not working in tandem, but rather they each have a unique, different role, they're often actually working in opposing fashions. Take our hammer example. The goal of your right hand when you're swinging the hammer forward is to drive the nail forward into the wall. The goal of your left hand is to limit any movement in any other direction. So the right is advancing movement, pushing forward, and the left is limiting movement, removing force from either side. But both of them are combining to share the greater goal of getting the nail straight into the wall in the desired spot. Let's take another example to bring it out. Let's say you're pushing a cart in a grocery store. So when you're just walking in a forward straight line, you generally use both your hands equally to push forward, or maybe you just use your right hand. But what happens when you want to turn? Your right hand continues to provide the forward movement. It provides the force to push forward, while the left hand guides that movement in the direction you want to go. It steers left or right. So the right hand again is the one moving forward, and the left hand again is the one defining that forward movement and enabling it to express itself in the desired way. And you'll find this parallel exists in almost every shared action in which you use both your hands. The theme is always the same. The primary action, the driving force, comes from your right hand, and the left hand limits and guides that force to a productive desired outcome. Now let's come back to Judaism for a minute. There's a very basic concept in Kabbalah, which is known as the Ten Sefiros. And it basically describes the process of God relating to the world. There's ten Sefiros, which is basically ten filters of varying dimensions of spirituality that serve as the connection between God and the world, so that the world isn't completely overwhelmed by God's presence. Rather, there are these like levels of filtration or more opaqueness until the world can express itself as we know it. That's obviously an extreme oversimplification of what they are. But for the sake of our conversation, what's important to know is that there are these 10 spheres or 10 levels of connection and thereby distance from God. And in Kabbalah, each of these 10 spheres has its own name. And Kabbalah also teaches us that each one of them correspond to a specific part of the human body. And the Tikkuni Zohar writes, kindness is the right arm and hand. Restraint or justice is the left arm and hand. And beauty is the center. So the fourth sphera, which is called kindness, chesed in Hebrew, corresponds to the right. The fifth sphera, called gvura, which is justice or restraint, corresponds to the left arm. And the sixth sphera, called tiferes, or beauty, corresponds to the center, in our case, the torso. So now that we know that the right side is kindness and the left side is justice and restraint, and beauty lies in the center, meaning the synthesis of these two when they're working together, let's apply that to our analysis of the physical body and see how it plays out in spirituality. The right, we explained, is the driving force, the primary action. Kabbalah teaches us that the right side is called kindness. Kindness is the driving force of the world. It's the reason God created the world. As the verse says in Psalms chapter 89, verse 3, Olam chesed yibaneh, God built a world of kindness. The goal of the world is kindness. The left, as we explained, guides and defines the forward energy of the right in order that that energy can manifest itself properly. So let's just take an example between two people of kindness and restraint to bring out this point, and then we can apply it to a more global level. Let's say I have a friend named Joe. And Joe lives in a nice apartment, and I decide I want to do an act of kindness for him. I know my friend well, and I know that Joe's been wanting to buy a really nice dining room table for a while. So I decide I'm going to surprise him and buy him a new dining room table. Now, I want to do kindness in the greatest way I possibly can. So I look all over town, I go on all the different websites, and I find him the biggest, fanciest, largest, greatest dining room table ever created. Such an amazing act of huge kindness. But the problem is that his dining room is only 250 square feet. So in this case, giving him a 30-foot long dining room table, even though maybe you'll say, well, a 30-foot table is a greater act of kindness than giving only a 7-foot table, but it has to fit the recipient's ability to receive. Has to fit Joe's needs for it to truly be kindness. So kindness in and of itself, if I would just take that to the max, it would say give him a 30-foot table. And if you want to be really, really nice and do real kindness, maybe you should get him 100 30-foot tables. Give him even more and more. That would be real kindness. But then restraint and justice comes in as a secondary. It comes in to define that kindness. It limits it to just one table. And that one table is just 7 feet long. But this is what allows the kindness to actually express itself in a productive, desired way. So again, the primary action is an action of kindness. But in order for it to express itself properly, it has to have the left side, which is restraint or justice, limiting it, enabling it really to express itself in the greatest way. Let's take another example, because this really applies in so many different areas of life. Another great application of this is with our children. What would happen if we always acted with endless kindness? We would just always say yes to every single request that our children asked from us. It would be terrible. They would never develop into mature, healthy adults. We need to say no. We have to limit what we give them and what we allow them. But the question is, why are we doing that? Why do we say no to our children? We have to remember the left has to always come to define the right. The reason why we say no to our children is because we love them. And in order for our kindness to them to have true expression, it has to be defined into what's appropriate for them. So when we're saying no to our children, it's their functioning together with the yes. It's the left side that's subservient to the right, which is functioning for the same greater goal of doing kindness for our children. And you can imagine that if the left became the dominant one, if our primary goal was to limit and restrict our children, and we only sometimes said yes in order that they could bear it, what a horrible lesson that would be. Our goal is always in all of life to prioritize the right side. Our primary desire is to always do kindness, and all limitation is there to express the kindness in a greater way. So to answer our original question, why does Judaism prioritize the right side over the left side in so many different aspects of Jewish law? It's because we always want our overarching goal and the drive of our actions to be kindness. And even when justice and restraint is necessary and we need that limitation, it's for the ultimate sake of kindness. It's to limit that kindness in a way that can have a greater expression in the world to fit the needs of the one receiving it. So in all of Judaism, if it's an action that only has one side, we always give it to the right side. And if we're using both the right side and the left side, we always start with the right side, expressing that this world and our actions and our relationships and everything that we're focused on is all an expression of kindness. And only after that do we do the left, whose role is supplementary, to maximize that output of kindness. I hope you enjoyed this episode. You should know you could always reach out to me through my website, thethinkingjew.com, or my email, thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Until next time, have an awesome week.
Thank you for listening to the Thinking Jew Podcast and for taking the time to study Torah and deepen your connection to Judaism. If you found value in today's episode, please leave us a rating or review and subscribe to the podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or topic requests for Rabbi Moshe, please email thethinkingjewpodcast@gmail.com or visit thethinkingjew.com.